Let's do the math, all right?
Yeah, let's see it.
You pull down a $100 million slug. You will have access now to private investments. You will be able to beat 5%. Your 7% annual return is 7 mil. Your monthly run rate on just pure gravy, $583,000 a month.
I couldn't spend that in a month.
Okay.
I couldn't.
This is so stupid. I didn't want to admit to the general public how stupid this is. Guys, when you start a company, I f***ed up, man. Welcome to Ear Juice, featuring Nicholas Crown and Michael Panic. Michael, who is Michael Panic?
It's Michael Panic. Yeah.
Who are you? Tell the studio audience.
Wow,
who you
are. Just like totally put me on the spot there.
If you forget, I could, you know, fill in the gaps for everybody.
You know, I would say, who am I? I think the verbiage I use on my website is the perfect way to put it. My name is Michael Panic, and I use computers to create things.
Okay.
That's what I do. That's what I've always done since the first time I touched a computer. I was like, I can make anything with this machine.
You're doing it right now.
And that's exactly what I do.
So what are you doing right now?
I am the CTO and co-founder of FastOutreach.ai, which is an AI-powered sales enablement platform. We help the salespeople of the world reach out and find their earliest prospects and do all that fun stuff. And we, at the very core of it, use AI to make that process seamless and flawless, and maybe not flawless yet, but...
Yeah, not quite. But,
we're,
you know, we'll get there.
Yeah,
we'll get
there. There.
Who is the, we have a ghost, we have a dark horse co-founder who will not be named, but who's the other one?
Who's the other guy?
Who's the other guy we can mention?
Nick Crown?
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
fine,
okay.
Fine. That's you.
Have you ever played the game FMK, something, marry, kill?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
This is an FMK.
Oh, my gosh.
Microsoft Azure, Python, Linux.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm marrying Linux.
Okay.
That's like a no brainer, dude. I'd actually marry Linus Torvalds. Linus, hit me up, baby.
Is that the founder of?
Yeah. The guy who wrote it himself, like in his bedroom.
If you guys haven't realized, this podcast, anything can happen.
Oh,
this episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
Python.
Okay. I'm gonna.
Don't say the F word. It's too early for you.
But I'm going to do that to Python because I'm going to kill Microsoft Azure. I'm just an AWS Google Cloud guy.
But we're
core.
Built on a series of different
Yeah,
pieces.
I mean, we're cross-cloud in multi-platform, which is, I think, a good way to do it. You know, we have some AWS, we have some Google Cloud, we have third-party systems, and we have a little bit of Azure out of necessity. I think really what it comes down to with these technologies is what's your comfort level. Mm. And I haven't used it as much because the people who love Azure hate AWS. Mm. I know so many of those guys, and that's just how life kind of works. You get in your little comfort zone and then you're like, well, I'm really productive with this thing. So I don't want to play with other stuff. I don't want to deal with the headache and the learning curve and the whatever else. And so you become a purist and then you're like, oh, it just sucks. It doesn't suck. You just don't know it.
It's like a team. It's like if you're a Bulls fan or a Knicks fan.
Yeah.
And don't you guys like put the stickers on your computers and shit like that?
It's like, I heard it compared to prison tattoos one time, you know? That's your scars.
It feels like that.
It is like that, you know?
It feels like that.
Because I got a new laptop when we started working on this, and the first thing I did was our stack. I have the Vue logo, the Python logo, and the Google Cloud logo. And
That's
I was like,
awesome.
I didn't even have these on my old laptop because I'd never used them that much, so.
Well, how did this whole thing get started? How did Fast Outreach, how did I meet you?
So I'm going to tell this story.
How are you
here
right now? Yeah.
I was in the Caribbean. I was like having a vacation with some friends. We were having this fabulous time in Curacao, and I knew we were flying back through Miami, and I was reading your book, and I saw that, I knew in my mind that you lived in Miami cause you used to, I didn't know at the time. And I just I messaged you on Instagram and I was like, hey, I'm flying through Miami. I'm going to be there for a full day. I've been reading your book. It's fantastic. I will trade you. I'll buy you a drink if you'll sign the book. And
is that the first thing you said?
That is the first thing I said. We started with that message and I didn't even think you were going to message me back. And out of nowhere, you were just like, hey, I'll do you one better. Can you get on the phone in an hour? I was like,
yeah,
yes. And all my friends are like, hey, we're about to go to the beach. We're about to go to the other side of the island. I was like, you guys go. I was like, I got something to do. And they were like, are you sure? And I was like, I don't worry about it. I just go. And
then we're on a Google Meet in like 5 seconds, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You were like, I just got to get back to my desk. And we're sitting there talking. And it was so weird because I've like followed your content for a while and seen your videos and read your book. And all of a sudden we're just like chatting and you're telling me about this thing that you've been working on. You're like, I need somebody like just devoted to this. You told me you'd been working with a bunch of like contractors that had done good work. But when you're building something like this, there's so much iteration early on that you just about can't do it with somebody who's not with you constantly, daily, every step of the way. And so you basically are like, are you crazy enough to do this with me?
To join the circus.
And the answer was, I'm bored enough.
Yeah. You know? Well, thank God.
And so, it's been a wonderful.
Yeah, I remember
man.
Talking to you. You're in a hotel room.
Yeah, it was
you
actually
got the
a
laptop
house.
Cracked
yeah.
open or whatever.
It's awesome.
And you know, on my side, my perspective is, I was just about ready to throw in the towel with Fast Outreach because I bought the code base before ChatGPT was released to the general public. So what was that? A year and a half, 2 years ago?
Yeah, right.
Okay, I buy this code base. I start to modify the code base, spending inordinate amounts of money to modify it. And then I'm like, wait, this whole pay by the hour thing in a startup environment, no matter how smart you think you are, or what audience you think you, it's bullshit. There's no such thing as hour, chop it up by the hour because of the amount of tweaks and changes and modifications that you have to make to pull even anything that a customer would be willing to part with fucking $10 for is probably 1,000 iterations from whatever the starting point is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, with a startup, speed is your enemy and your best friend, right? And the tighter your feedback loops from what does the market want? What do the people want? Who's buying what? And how fast can we build it? That's your, like that flywheel of learning to building, to learning, to building. And really it's the old adage is learn, test, build. And the faster you can do that, the faster you get somewhere. And if you are paying a contractor by the hour and you're just waiting, right, you just can't do it. Yeah, it's just not going to work.
Well, also, like, look, you've contracted out your labor, right, before, you know, because if you're an engineer, you're never going to be hungry as a software engineer because you're like, I got laid off from this job or whatever. I've got some time on my hands. Well, you can monetize that. Probably, I'd argue, the fastest of any specific skill set right now.
Probably, yeah.
You know, it's like you can always jump into a project, you know, if you're halfway decent and you know what that's like. You're not really aligned with the mission. You're just a hired gun, and a hired gun's only going to do so much for you.
Right. You know, I'm not afraid to bring on hired guns where we are now because we know where we're going and it's me leading them. But I have been the solo engineer on a project where somebody's basically like, this is what we want. Go build it. And I'm like, What's my stake in this? Is it just the money at the end of it? Well, you know, unfortunately, it's a human like mental thing you can't get past. You just put in that hired gun effort. You don't put in ownership effort. And even if it's a, you know, you've got to believe in what you're working on or you're not going to give it more than just a worker's attitude.
Meaning you show up and then you go home, you crack a Miller Lite and that's that.
And I don't think about it.
We're in our world, we're constantly thinking about this 24 hours a day.
I don't stop thinking about it.
Right.
Yeah. Because I can't help myself because I'm obsessed with it.
Right.
And if you're obsessed with the problem, you get so embedded that you can't help but do the work beyond even your own expectations of yourself. That's really the dichotomy. Are you obsessed with the problem or is it somebody else's problem?
Look, you said we know where we're going. How long have we known where we're going?
Five fucking minutes? I mean, literally, I think a week ago I was like,
oh,
wow, we have a roadmap. We have a plan.
How many hours do you think we put in before we had any clue?
Countless. Yeah. I mean, 60 hour weeks for 3-4 months. Mm-hmm. And then one day it was like, oh, I see it. I get it. This is happening. This is working. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to see that happen, isn't it? Hasn't that been like the coolest change?
Well, think about how much egg has been on our shirts until then, right? Yeah. Because customers come in, they spend a little bit of money. We don't give them exactly what they want. And then they might never come back.
Usually they don't.
They usually don't come back. Why would you come back?
Probably not.
Right.
And that's a hard realization, but it's so important for us to realize. And I, just to reflect for a second, I think the big thing is we don't know how to sell to these people because A, we don't exactly know who they are. Mm-hmm. B, we haven't taken the time to learn who they are. We're trying to learn what they want. Mm. And the shift that I think we've seen in the last, you know, several weeks that's really put us on a good trajectory is we stop just trying to listen to what the customer wants and really understand who they are. When you learn who they are, you can learn how to sell to them. You intrinsically learn what problems they have, how to solve them, all that stuff. But you get this really clear picture of who they are. And that has put us on the trajectory to building something that is exactly what people want. To the point that, you know, we do these demos now. And we had one the other day. And the guy is sitting there telling me, wouldn't it be great if it did this? And I'm like, that's the next thing on our roadmap. And then he's like, if it's going to do that, couldn't it do this? I was like, that's the next thing on our roadmap. Yeah. And he gave me like our entire product roadmap as his dream product. And I was like, this is alignment. This is exactly what it feels like.
The way that I think about this, right? It's, you know, everyone wants to go into business and sell a product. It's like really for what we've been doing for from the moment I bought the code base is several years, right? It's almost like you're just setting up the laboratory to listen. There's no business.
Yeah.
This is, let me actually listen. Whatever my starting point is, for me, it was a really rudimentary thing that it literally took your LinkedIn profile and spit out a personalized two lines, three lines. And by the way, that was incredible.
It was.
In the beginning, a couple of years ago. Now, of course, that's table stakes, right? But that was the opening up of this process of starting to think about how to solve these very unique, weird problems that salespeople are dealing with on a daily basis.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I mean, I remember the first time after that initial call, when you told me about it, of course, the first thing I do is like, go check it out and try it. And it blew my mind. I was like, this works so well.
You sure about that?
Yeah. At the time, cause it was like, that line and it asked me about a restaurant near me, which I've seen the magic behind the mirror now. And I'm like, oh, it was, that was actually really happy.
Geo-targeting.
But whatever, it worked and it blew my mind. But the thing is, this world changes so fast. You and I have discovered that we have to get not one step, but like five steps ahead of everybody. That's our superpower. That's why we are blowing people's minds. I mean, if I can brag for a second, that's why we're blowing people's minds is because they're like, this isn't just a little AI sprinkled on top of a thing. This is, you guys are like thinking about how to make my life easier. When you do that for somebody, you don't just like solve one problem. You change their lives. Mm-hmm. Not to be dramatic, but you start to, you know, these products start to like change the way people work, improve their whole experience in work. And work is what we do for, you know, almost eight hours minimum a day.
Yeah.
Tools should help you and not hinder you. And I think we've taken that ethos to heart, which is funny because we're working in something that's not our industry specifically. But we're still somehow so attached to this problem that we are thinking for the customer. Yeah. And the response has been really good because of it.
We're like bird watchers of salespeople.
Yeah.
We're like,
we're just watching them, like, seeing what they need.
Look at what they're doing out there. It's beautiful.
And here we see the wild SDR coming in for the kill. We think he's going to make a close. Let's watch how he proceeds.
He's sending a follow-up email now. Let's take a look. Let's take a watch.
The male sends a flagrant display of...
It's delicious. The whole thing is there's this obscure thing called business or startups or whatever. There is no such thing. It's like you create something just to get started. Then you pile in resources or people that want to join the cause. And then it's like only then do you start to learn.
Yeah.
And then you have to have the luxury to be close to a customer who wants to be close to you. And your crazy ass ideas, and they don't know who the hell you are.
They're a stranger.
And they don't care.
But they're going to care if you care about them and their problems. That's so yeah, all of business is really about finding a problem and sort of devoting yourself to it. And it doesn't even really matter what kind of business you're in or like what you do. If you find a problem that you care about, And it doesn't even have to, I think a lot of people would say it's got to be personal. Oh, it's got to be something that's very personal.
Right.
It doesn't. Cause like I have never been a professional salesperson. But it, 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 is a problem that I've made personal to me. Mm-hmm. I've become very like sympathetic or in tune with the plight of the salesperson
right.
through doing this, because, you know, I just feel like this is a real problem that we have a real opportunity to solve. So I'm going to get really close to it and figure out how to solve it and apply what I know about technology to make their lives easier.
Yeah. And when you start to do it, you start to see the feedback change and get more, you start to see people get excited and jump on board. And then you get what we call, you know, champions, product champions or design partners, where people who don't know you from fucking a guy on the street, right, are now helping coach you through how they would use the tool. And they just provide this amazing feedback.
Yeah.
Where if you just listen and just do the goddamn thing, right, as long as it's in line with the trajectory of what you're doing, you're like, money is going to pop out of the freaking sky. The whole deal here is like, if you get close to the truth is, this is a problem. And this is like, we start with the problem. The problem is, hey, people send a lot of emails, but that's not really the problem. It goes 10 layers deeper, and you don't get to the 10 layers until you start on the first dumb thing. Yeah. And then of course you think, you know, you're going to be driving flying a private jet. You're like, I sent more emails. It's like, yeah, well, that's not actually the problem. These emails don't sound like me.
Right.
Oh, wait, you want them to sound like you? Well, yeah. Yeah. Oh shit. Well, it's got to sound like you and you got to send them.
We can do that.
This is okay. Well, let's figure this out. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now it sounds like you and you sent them. All right. Well, what about the customer that you're sending it to? Yeah. It sounds like me, but it doesn't even know anything about the cut. Oh, you want that too?
Yeah.
Damn, this problem's getting really complicated.
But you know what? If it wasn't a complicated problem, it would already be solved.
Sure.
And why would we spend so much of our time solving an easy problem? I mean, if that's what you want, that's fine.
Well, that's what I want, to be honest with you. I didn't really want to work this hard.
Okay.
Okay, when I signed up for that, I was like, this is going to be people. This is going to be pretty easy. I buy this code base. I modify it. People love it. They use it, you know, and I sail off into the sunset. And here we are fucking three years later. And we're just, you know, scratching the surface of the problem.
Sorry about
you're
that
a hard worker. Okay.
Since we started working, I was like, you know, I used to think I was a hardworking person before I met you. And I'm like, this dude doesn't stop.
Oh, me?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to get gushy, but you're unreal. Like, it's amazing to me. And it's motivated me. Right. I think that's an important point is, I was very bored in my career. I felt very restrained and slow. And I had this vision of where I wanted to go. I was like not doing a lot. I was not working hard. I felt it all kind of atrophying. And being around you, being around some of these other people that I've met through this process has motivated me beyond even where I was before my career started slowing down. The people you are around, you're going to become like them in some ways or another. It's going to start to wear off on you. And you've, I think, encouraged me to like see what really working tirelessly at something is. This process has got me working tirelessly again in a way I haven't in years. Mm-hmm. And because I like what I do, it's like the happiest I've ever been. This is the most I've worked. I mean, like, what is our average day? I'm up at 5 and I'm asleep at like 9 and bed at 9.
You started this whole 5 a.m. thing.
I know. This is not you. No. This is all on me.
I have nothing to do with this.
This is all on me.
Yeah.
But that's my day. And, you know, I take little gaps here and there, but I'm working through all of that because there's nothing else I really want to do. It's not because, oh, if I don't do it now, it's got to happen. And you know, Nick's going to come down on me.
Well, you own the pressure. You own it. Too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm so obsessed with this and I love it so much. It's all I want to do. I would never ask anybody else to work like this. Especially
this is
somebody
sick.
Who worked for me.
This is
it
sick.
Is sick. It's sick and wrong, but you know,
sick in the head, Mike.
I'm a sick person. Okay. I'm an overworking sick human being.
Send help.
Please. Yeah. My therapist she's great, but
she's
not
great,
enough.
But she can't keep up.
She can't actually.
Not since this company.
No,
started.
Actually it's terrified her a little bit.
Really?
She's like excited, but she's like, this is crazy. She was like, you know, you realize we meet once a month and like every month I'm like, everything's changed. And I was like, yeah, everything changes every day right now. Mm-hmm. You're a month behind. That's a lifetime. Yeah. She loves it. I mean, she believes in it, but
can we
just
sell into her practice?
Let's see.
Get her a license.
Let me think on that. Yeah.
Get her a demo.
Yeah. I'm going to call her up as soon as I'm home. Yeah.
If you're listening to this podcast and you
Dr.
have
Reynolds.
Two or more seats, You call us and we'll set you up.
Hey, I would actually say, you know, we are in this stealth mode that's been phenomenal for us.
A stealth mode that's after a non-stealth mode.
Right. We went back into stealth mode.
Okay.
Right?
Why did we do that?
My thoughts on why that was such a good... Yeah, I know. Yeah, and I want to hear your like take on this. My thoughts on why we did this and why it's so important is that, you know, we were not learning enough from the individuals that would just sign up and come in, because most of them would sign up, come in, try the product just enough to see what it did. They just wanted to see it generate an email and they'd go, oh, that was kind of cool. And they'd bounce and we'd never see them again.
Right.
The couple of people who would like pay and actually register and sign up, they were either spammers or they were just, again, individuals. And we've known for a while, we're building this tool for enterprise. So we were like, we're building a tool for enterprise and we don't know how to sell to them. Let's take the public sign up out. Let's start vetting every person that comes through
manually,
see who they are, see what their size is. How many seats are you looking for? What are you trying to get out of this?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we have this amazing core group of people using it who are willing to pay, which is super important because then we can have a little money to hire a little help to build things faster. But more than the money, we're getting real immediate feedback. We're not just watching the screen, the Hotjar recordings and watching the metrics come through and go, I think this is why they bounced. I think this is what they were looking for. We're talking to them daily, sometimes weekly at the least, and understanding what are your actual needs. Before they ever get in the platform, we talk to them about, what do you want to accomplish with this? What are you trying to do? And they tell us. And then sometimes you have to say, hey, this isn't for you.
Right.
This is not the right product.
We can't take the money. We don't want to take the money. Yeah.
I want money, but I don't want their money.
Right.
And it's, I think that's the thing. It's put it back on us to say, who are we, who can we really work with and who can we learn the most from? We're only taking in people we're going to truly learn from.
Yeah.
And we're kind of turning away some of the rest. I mean,
well, we were disappointing the people and we weren't learning from them at the same time. So it was brand destructive.
It was.
Basically, we weren't handing the feature set out to the individual user that's, you know, got a small design shop, whatever, you know, they want to send more emails. We're not really built that way. So why piss you off,
right?
Not learn from you because you're not as motivated to provide feedback and get a solution as a 100-person sales team is, where they're like, hey, if we get this right, we're going to make $20 million from this.
Yes.
And so like they're freaking motivated.
Yeah.
Okay. And so they're more willing to provide the feedback because of how motivated they are. If you got a small design shop, you know, hey, I get it. You got to grow the business, but if you don't use us, you'll figure out a way to get the email. There's another tool for you out there and you'll use it and it'll be cheaper and it'll be built and it'll be maybe perhaps a little bit more user friendly, whatever it is. It's just like, okay, we need the people that are like, either have to get this right, meaning I really have to get AI and this scale factor out to my sales team, or we're not going to grow.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get fired, or I'm not going to get my bonus, and
they
I'm not going to
some level of that motivation.
Yeah. This weird thing about, you know, what is stealth mode? Stealth mode is basically operating on an invite only basis, meaning you can't go and just sign up and pay and use the tool. That idea was like, I guess it's something that we all independently thought about together, but we didn't know how to say it because it's kind of weird. We were making money. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And now we're doing it on a case by case basis. But ultimately for us, it's like, we will learn faster. We will have less noise. We'll be able to streamline the process. Also, what no one realizes is like when you're building software, like every time you roll out a feature or update, you have to tell everyone about it.
Yes.
So like if there's 1,000 users on the platform or 2,000 users on the platform, whatever there was, it's like, and you change something completely, you've basically pissed off 2,000 people.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Like,
and on that note too, just from a dev perspective, you know, it was eating up a ton of time. Okay, so we've rolled out this feature, which is a database change. Well, I've got 100 old records, and now I have to split them into 100 new records in one and 100 new records in another because there's people using it. Well, suddenly, when we don't have those people, I can make all the freewheel and boom,
you can get away
change.
With a lot of crazy shit.
I can do whatever I want.
Right.
It doesn't affect anybody and I don't have to worry. And so now that we're kind of in this stealth mode invite only, we had one of those changes in the deploy last week. And I'm like, I tried to script it so it would happen automatically. I was like, this is not working. And then I really looked at it and I was like, wait a second. One of these users, one of them is going to be affected by this.
Okay.
So yeah. I just manually moved it over. Okay. I literally like took it out of the database. I actually ran it through ChatGPT to transform it to a new format of data. And then I just plugged it right back in. It's like, that was so easy.
Nobody knows the wiser. Nobody unless cares. You're that one user watching this podcast. In which case, you got a white glove service.
Yeah. I mean, I manually migrated.
Moved your freaking data.
There was no scripting. No, it was fully manual, totally white glove. A labor of love in the middle of the night by yours truly.
You cook?
Yeah, I like to cook.
Okay. Yeah. It's like that.
It is. It really was. Yeah.
It's like Michael Panic special. What do you do?
Yeah. Like a lot of Italian cooking. So okay.
It's like a Sunday gravy.
Yeah, it kind of was actually. Happened. I was like, this was me deglazing the pan to start my ragu rather than dump it right out of a jar.
Right.
That's what you got.
When you're doing this kind of shit, right? What's...
I'm scared to know what's coming next.
Well, it's funny because we're basically saying at one point there's thousands of eyeballs in each one of these changes. Now there's just a few big eyeballs or organizations of many. What's scarier to you when you're, I feel like we got all like calm and relaxed. And what's so funny is the stakes are actually way more high now.
Oh yeah.
But I'm feeling pretty calm and relaxed about the whole process.
Me too.
But I guess let's see what I'm trying to tease apart here. It's like, you think of software, it's just this, you have to build this product that appeases everybody, right? And you want everyone to love it and everyone to use it. And I think we started out that way and tried to build that tool. And now we're like, I think we're going to make the tool that makes a small group of people really, really excited and happy, and a much larger group go, I don't really know what I'd do with this. It's too expensive for my purposes. And I don't really, and I mean, just us looking at the market and slicing it, we're going to be just fine solving it for a smaller group of professional sellers for or sales teams. Now instead of having this sort of slow growth and usership, and now it's, we have these discrete stair steps when we sell a big block to.
It's contracted, which I think is why the stakes are higher, but because it's to these organizations who really get it, who truly have the problem that we're solving.
Right.
And they're giving us that immediate feedback. It's less scary for me because used to be, I mean, we had a couple of these times where like we'd push a feature and it would mostly work and then we'd find the bug and it was like, oh shoot, this affected, like I would, you know, there was a couple times where I went through and found every user that it affected, usually manually. And then I would send them an email, explain, hey, you know, you experienced this and it's been corrected and all this stuff. And now it's like, I'm going to find out immediately because these people are invested in us and they're going to, like, if something's bad, they're going to call us. They're going to let us know immediately, hey, this is broken. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Because again, it's about tightening those feedback loops. What's tighter than the second that I push a bad piece of code, they're like calling us like, hey, this is broken. Yeah. Great. Because I can fix it just about as fast as they call me. You know, that's important for, you know, if anybody is in.
Big users are going to call you. The small users aren't going to call you. They're going to go, I'll just use something else.
Yeah, they're just going to bounce.
Yeah.
And it's important to know that, like, software is going to break. That's part of it. Google breaks sometimes. There are times where Google's flagship products go down. Facebook has gone down. It's not
Facebook goes
common,
down quite a bit.
But it goes down.
Yeah.
And the thing to remember is it's not about building such a bulletproof system that it never fails. It's about being able to respond. Mm. And you can't respond if you don't know there's a problem.
Right.
So, you know, you can do, we have all the monitoring and metrics and we use Sentry and all that stuff to watch it. Nothing beats good old fashioned user testing in prod.
Yeah.
And the second that they find it, they're letting us know we're fixing it faster. So the stakes are higher. The response rate is higher. It's just better all around. I feel like we're building a better product because of it.
Got to stay on top of it.
Yeah.
Out here. That's in the streets.
It's, you know, it's hard out here in SaaS land, right? It's a crowded market. You got to be good.
It's like a crowded market. You know, my whole thing is these kind of sales enablement tools. Obviously we're becoming quite students in the space competitively and what the feature said isn't all that shit. It's just like sometimes in life you think the competition, because they're worth $1 billion, has some just incredible amount of leverage over you. And then you just like look really closely and you're like, yeah, not so much. Like actually they didn't move fast enough into where things are headed with AI, and they're just not making things easier fast enough for the users. And this is like, this is why people can come and upset the market, and we're hopefully we have our place here at some point in the future. But I don't know, man, there's two things that I've really felt here is it's harder and crazier than you could have ever imagined. That's number one. Number two, when you start to get your place and your positioning, you realize that the competition, while they do have capital, you have other assets that they don't have.
Yeah.
So they have capital, they've got headcount, but you know, capital and headcount around a product that isn't meeting the needs of a developing sales market that wants cooler shit doesn't mean anything.
Who cares? Yeah. And the thing that we have is speed. That's what we have. We have, you know, the immense speed of response. That speed is super important. And we haven't sacrificed product quality. You know, code quality is kind of a different thing where I sometimes put stuff together that if you're a programmer and you're reading it, you're like, this is confusing. Mm. Most of the time I'm always writing the best code that I can with the speed I've got. Sometimes you just put it together. There's always time to fix it later. Every time I go back and write a new feature, I clean up whatever's there. Mm-hmm. I rethink every bit of it because now it's just about improving on it and making it a little bit better. So we have that speed on our side. And the other thing that I think we have in particular, the speed is pretty true of most startups versus, you know, that's the David versus Goliath, is David always has the speed. What we also have, and we've talked about this a ton, all these big platforms are just trying to sprinkle a little AI.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are AI to our core. Every time something comes up, it's like, can we use some natural language processing? Can we use some machine learning? How can we use these tools to truly make it easier? Even tools that I love, they all are big on this, like, oh, we have AI now. We implement
bullshit.
AI.
Bullshit.
No, yeah, it's total BS, dude. All they're doing is like, oh, click this button and we'll generate a title for your Notion document. I can create a title.
So to me, there's cute novelty versus utility, right? AI came out and it's like, it's raw ingredients. That's all it is. Yeah. It's just raw ingredients, a new type of ingredient that you haven't seen before. Now you need to go and make it useful. Okay. The thing is, you know, to be there and to appease investors, you go, hey, we're AI enabled. It's like, well, is it useful? Is anyone using that title generator? Is anyone using that whatever is spit out of the end of this thing or not? You know, there's been in the social media space, one of the most sort of problematic thing is repurposing content and tweaking and making remixes, and even especially for paid media. Mm-hmm. You want to create a video of me doing this, talking about something, and spin off 20 different versions of it. And man, I've used so many of these pieces of software where I'm like, this is truly not saving me any time. Like, right. This isn't useful at all. You're a title generator or some kind of, and some of these platforms are better than others. And now that I'm in our world, I see who's doing it right and who's doing it wrong, or who's really truly trying to make an impact. But yeah, if it's about novelty, the cat's out of the bag, guys. Everybody's got ChatGPT for free sitting on their freaking desktop. That's novelty.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's free, and they could, you know, my dad's telling me, he goes, I got such poor treatment the other day on the airline, and I had ChatGPT write a 4-page complaint, and he goes, and they gave me a new ticket. I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool, Dad. Not so bad, you know, but like, you're not going to use that export just raw to do solve mega serious shit.
No.
Right. So the eye roll AI is novelty, cuteness AI. That's the eye roll. Okay. But the finding the utility, and this is way different than the, you know, digital, I'm not even say the C word, digital currency and this kind of thing, is way freaking different, guys, because once you take these raw ingredients and you massage them and you put through the paces and we learn who you are and we micro model and we do all these things, it gets really, really useful.
Yeah.
And it saves you tired person, you, from having to type or think too hard. You don't type or think too hard anymore where anywhere else you look. There's machine learning in the back of your freaking Netflix account. And there's the reason why, you know, you've watched The Sopranos of 400 times. Oh, you
I
know.
Feel targeted.
Yeah, I was the target. I was at you, bro.
Rude.
I was at my brother's house the other day, and he was just like, I came in the morning, he just was just like quietly watching The Sopranos. I was like, you still watch The Sopranos? He's like, dude, I watch Sopranos every day.
It's the best show.
Anyway, so there's all this stuff behind the scenes that are, you know, you don't even know. Your entire phone is powered by machine learning, and that's why your goddamn For You looks different than Susie's or Johnny's or whatever. And okay, now it's time for you to start taking the reins.
Right.
And applying this technology to generate results in your own life in an outward fashion, not just to be sold shit or to find the perfect cartoon that you didn't know existed or whatever it is that you're into. Not talking to you. I'm not pointing fingers about that. Are,
yeah. The thing is like you talk about like the eye roll, the novelty of it. And I think the difference is like generative AI is a solved problem now. It's solved. Everybody is iterating like, you know, N to N plus one. It's not O to one anymore. LLMs are pretty much a solved problem. So if all you're doing is generating some text and making a
You're not doing anything.
Right? And we have been so intentional. And I see other platforms that are doing it. Very few, but some are really out here. Some of us are really like, wait a second. Anybody can generate some crap. We've got to do it down to the core. And what that looks like in practice is like, don't just, you know, do the thing that saves me 5 seconds, which is generate a sales email.
Yeah.
It's take a list of 100 people and personalize this email deeply, not just fill in some blanks, but I mean, understand who they are. I loved it. You were there for this. And I love to tell the story is we were working with a Porsche dealership. And the best example of personalization I've seen is where we had this in the same list with the same base email. The list included the models they had looked at mm-hmm. and their occupation. One of them was like a stay-at-home mom, and one of them was the CEO of a company. For the stay-at-home mom who had looked at the Cayenne, it was like talking about how you don't have to sacrifice your the glamour of life and luxury just because you're a mom, and how the Cayenne is like the great fit. And then the same base email, the same run of a campaign for that CEO who had looked at the 911 or the 911 was like, what was the line that it came up with? I can't wait for you to feel the thrill
yeah.
as you whip through downtown Miami in a 911 with the top. I was just like, dude, this is the kind of thing
uh-huh.
that you can't do on your own.
No.
You cannot.
No.
You'd waste just as much time making that happen on your own that you might as well just write them all by hand.
Yeah.
Right. We're when you really save somebody time and you do the things they can't just do on their own, then you've iterated, then you've created something. If all you're doing is allowing me to do in this tool what I can just do with another tool, it's just bringing them together. You've hit the dregs of your industry at that point. If you're just combining a few tools together,
yeah,
you're not iterating.
It's just lazy.
It is lazy. And I don't want to get high and mighty.
No, that's where I started.
I've done it a hundred times.
I'm going to get away with murder with this whole AI thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then really what that was, I'm thankful for it was just, okay, now you're going to learn.
The market kicked you in the teeth, man.
Oh, multiple times.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Aren't you happy that it did?
Well, I'm more robust now. I feel like I actually can be, I have confidence, as much confidence as I could have in a freaky space that's shifting every 5 seconds, but I have confidence that at least like I kind of know what the rules of engagement are out right here. Like, okay, I kind of feel comfortable in this environment. I kind of know if we do this, we'll get something that looks like this. And there's these predictable elements. It really has nothing to do with AI. It's just a methodology for how to approach and solve problems. It's like, so the whole deal is like, it's really hard to be open-minded if you've never gotten your ass kicked before. So, okay, go out, get your ass kicked and realize you're stupid and wrong and you don't know anything. Go do that. And then you could go, well, now I'm open-minded. Not because I, you know, watched a skit on TikTok. I'm open-minded because I know that this is the best way for me to get the answers faster with less pain and then to iterate or tweak and to move closer to where the money is. Because if we just stood by our guns from day one here when we first met and started jumping, we would still be delivering a tool with brackets and code embedded in the frickin' emails. And I remember when we had the, you know, I think the iteration that you inherited was this like very powerful, but very complicated way of prompting within text.
Correct. So and it was confusing. Confusing no one for knew, even me.
No one knew how to use it, but us.
Right. You know, and we would watch, like, the first thing we did was install Hotjar, and we started watching recordings, and people would just, like, get there.
They're like, this sucks.
What is this? And
I think I called you. I was just like, hey, I'm pretty sure that you and I are the only ones who know how to use this tool.
Yeah. And I was like, I have seen the videos, and you are correct.
Yeah.
You know, and the first thing that we did, which I think has set us up for success, was go, let's throw everything out the window. Let's challenge everything we think we know. And we still do that almost every day.
Yeah.
We're a little more aligned with the market. We're getting that feedback that what we're doing is right, but it's wonderful to go, I don't know anything. Let's throw it all out the door and, like, start over. Not totally start over, because once you've learned enough, you can never start over. You're not starting from zero, so you're not starting over. But you can scrap everything you've done and rethink it all.
Yeah, and we scrapped a shit ton.
We have scrapped so much. Some things I didn't even want to scrap, but you know what? Glad we did. And I think that's another good point, is you have to love this stuff. My favorite thing right now, and by favorite, I mean it's the most cringy thing on all of TikTok, all of content land, are these, like, 12 and 13 and 14 year old kids that are, like, you know, that are, like, hustle grind set dudes, but they're, like, 12 and 13 and 14. They'll literally, have you seen these? They'll literally be like, all my friends were out drinking and partying last night. I was like, what, are they drunk on Ovaltine?
Yeah, you're, what's 12. Going on, guys?
But they'll talk about, like, but in 6 months when I'm living my dream life, they're going to, I'm like, you don't even know.
This
what
is a thing.
Life, oh, there's so many of them. I get them. I'll show
How
you
old
later.
Are they?
Oh, literally 12, 13, 14, pre-driving. It's hilarious. These are children, and they're just obviously mimicking what they hear,
right.
You know, these kind of gurus say. It's just parroting. But what gets me is every one of them.
I'm not one of those people.
No, I don't see any of them being like,
I have nothing to do with this, guys.
No, this is not your fault. There's one person in particular whose
fault
it is.
Who will not be named.
Yeah, Tandrew 8. And
he will not be named. Yeah. When I was 12 or 13, I didn't even know what hustle was.
Dude, no. I was, okay, when I was...
I'm going to work on myself.
Yeah, no,
what does that
absolutely
mean? I was, like,
not
playing guitar in my room.
I was like, trying to learn how to write songs and, like, playing the piano to impress girls. That was me at 15.
Right.
And
I didn't even know that I was doing it to impress girls until, like, a little bit later.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
And I was like, good thing
By
I did.
By 16, yeah. I was like good oh, thing. This is for women. This is not...
Good
yeah.
thing I did all that in the bedroom, too.
Yeah, because then you were actually good. You weren't that guy that kind of sucked.
At the party that sucks at guitar.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse in this world than someone that says, hey, give me the guitar, and they suck. Don't do that. You know, all this AI, this stuff is below an importance level of that.
Don't be that guy. Yeah.
Everyone hates that guy. And God forbid there's a decent guitar player in the room. It's an enemy for
You're
life.
You're gonna get smoked.
You've made an enemy for life.
You have. My thing about these, because I don't want to get too, that's such a valid point.
Yeah.
Don't be the guitar guy at the party.
I'm the guy that if I'm at the party and you pull the guitar out and you sing some bullshit song, I'll never forget it.
I'm the guy that you have to, there's always a piano there, but you got to bully me
to
into
play
playing the piano. Yeah. I'm never going to like just sit down and play. And maybe that's a deep psychological thing. but like if we were out later today and you saw a piano,
like if a few beers came out later today,
you and my wife would both have to be like, play me something. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah,
and then
okay,
you'd be like, hold me closer.
I'll play you Tiny Dancing, dude. I know it. I'll play right now. Yeah, whatever. But where are we going?
I could have done a better
impression. It was great.
Yeah.
These kids, their thing is that they are like, I want to be free from. Also, I love it when they talk about freedom from the Matrix. Like, bro, your Matrix is like, what, going to school from 7 to 3? Like, oh, dude, yeah, I got to break free of the Matrix.
You're trying to brainwash me, man.
The Matrix. Dude, you're just learning about matrices and algebra 2.
You're
Shut
learning
up.
About geography, like basic geography. Like, just calm down.
It's brainwashing. They were teaching me about, you know,
it's extreme. I mean, the truth is, look, is it kind of interesting to see young people starting to think perhaps a little forward about what they want to do? And
it's great.
That's great.
It's great. And questioning this norm of like, I have to go to college. And
you
I have
definitely
to get a degree.
Don't. Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
I
okay?
love that.
This is thanks to the internet. There's,
yes.
If let's just say when I was 12, there was nobody teaching me hustle culture
no.
that I had access to, at least right. in my neck of the woods. So
yeah, not me at all. I was even terminally online by the time I was 12 years old, 13 years old. There's still nobody talking about this. But the negative side effects is these kids don't care about problem solving. So they don't care about business. They are just like, I want the spoils of victory.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's no challenge, and I could get there's really no
connectivity
nerdy.
Between the two things.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. In their mind, it's just like, I just am going to work hard and then I'm going to be rich. Successful. They don't even know what working hard looks like.
Right.
I wouldn't at that age either. I thought doing any work was hard. I started my career really early. I was only 17 years old when I started as a professional web developer, designer, more design at that point. And that's a whole interesting, you know, piece of backstory there. But the thing is, I didn't know what working hard looked like, and I had to learn that by actually working a little harder every time. And then in the end, I realized that, like, I haven't earned anything. I don't deserve these spoils until I've really kind of done the work.
The right work.
And it's also not about the spoils. I mean, you and I have sat around and talked about, like, oh man, if this thing goes as well as it, if it keeps going this well, what are we going to do? What is going to be fun? That's not my motivation. Cause you know what we're going to do? You know what I'm going to do when we sell this company? I'm going to go start another company. I'm going to spend a year. I've promised my wife, like, we're going to travel around the world for 1 year, and then I'm right back to it. I don't even think I'm going to make it a year. I think I'm going to, like, she wants to do these, like, luxury travel around the world things. I was like, 6 months in, I'm going to have already met somebody and we're going to already be building an expedition. Mm-hmm. Me and you are going to be on the phone already building our next business. Don't leave me out of this. I'm not leaving you out of this.
Don't cut me out of this shit.
I'm also not assuming. You might be so sick of me by then.
Dude, we're having fun.
I'm having a blast. And that's what it's all about. If you don't have fun, you're not going to do it.
You get a year on the beach, max.
Yeah, I will not make it that way. But my mantra for a long time is like, if it is fun, it will get done. That's it.
Boom.
That's the whole thing.
Viral
if it
cut.
Is fun, it will get done.
Print it. Yeah,
put that on YouTube.
Print it.
Because that's just the truth. And so many people are like, bro, I'm going to grind and I'm going to do the thing.
But, okay.
Da-da-da.
Let's
but
zoom
you
in.
Hate it.
Let's zoom in on this, right? This hard work thing. It's hard work are two words that you don't know what they mean until you've worked hard on the wrong thing.
Boom.
For way too long.
Yep.
Because it doesn't matter how hard you work, if you're working on the wrong thing, as you and I have had the pleasure of doing for maybe perhaps a year until we started to understand, like, we've worked on the wrong thing.
Yeah.
We've built the wrong thing. Is that hard work? No. The magic here isn't hard work. The magic here is open-mindedness.
Right.
And
right.
It's paying attention to feedback. The whole funny thing about the Lambo and the watch and the sweet, you know, pad in Miami, whatever, this is quite literally a side effect of getting the answers right. I mean, you automatically get paid when you hit the truth. The truth is like a vein in a fucking mountain, side of a mountain. It's like a golden vein of just, I've got the mother load. I hit it. And then all the money just pops out and you're good to go.
Right.
But the only way that you get there is being this, like, truth seeking device, which you could say it's hard work. You could also say it isn't. You could also say it's more methodical than it is hard, because I don't wake up every day going, I have to get it right. I'm just like, well, today I'm just going to learn and I'm going to make an adjustment. And every day I make a few adjustments. And then you look over the course of the year and you're like, huh, everything's a lot better than it was at the beginning of the year. Yeah. I've made some serious personal adjustments, man. It's what, February 9th? I've already seen the fruits of some personal adjustments I made, where I'm like, damn, I changed this one factor in my life and now I'm getting better results 30 days into the goddamn experiment. So yeah, it's like, you can grind all you want on the wrong problem and you're not going to get whatever it is you want in your mind, the Lambo or the beach house or whatever the fuck it is, because you're just not working on the right problem. So, hey man, you can keep working hard. You know, we've all done it, but one day you're going to be, the enlightenment moment is like, oh, it's not, it's like more jujitsu. Like I could try to plow through this wall, or I could direct my attention towards a new way to solve this, or a new problem, or something that's more meaningful, or something the market responds to.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, then it starts to just fucking rain all the good stuff. And you know, it's not, you haven't solved that one problem and tomorrow there's going to be a new problem.
It's going to be something else.
But that's the methodology, I think.
I've told you this story that, this is not my first rodeo with a startup, right? And I started a startup. I'll totally confess here that my big problem was closed-mindedness. That was my problem. I had this vision of how this was going to work and what we were going to do. And then it was going to work and it was going to be successful. It was going to be amazing. And we grinded away for like 2 years.
On one defined idea that you didn't even know if it was going to be a...
For sure. And to be totally truthful, it was, I have a solution and I'm going to go find the problem.
Yeah.
I did it so
backwards.
I'm going
to force people to embrace this little quirk that I've discovered.
Correct. Yeah. I did it so backwards. And my co-founder, at the end of it, after literally two years and some pitch competitions and a lot of work. I mean, I put so much of myself into it while working a full-time job on top of it. I was like, this is just not working. This is not for me. And I will totally confess that one of the ideas my co-founder had that I had shut down, I was just like, I don't think that's worth it. He dove into.
Okay.
And then it became kind of successful for him.
Okay.
After I'd left, after I walked. And you know what? I'm just happy for him. I'm just proud of him. I'm not mad about that. I don't care because I was the wrong fit for that product.
Sure.
Clearly, because I was the blocker. And I sometimes feel really bad about that, but I'm really glad he figured it out outside of me. But the number one thing it taught me is that whole idea of like, just be crazy open-minded to what it is. Because to be honest, we think we're pretty locked in right now. And I really feel like we are because market's responding. And like you said, the byproduct starts happening. I think I could say this. We closed 3 deals yesterday.
Yeah.
After like months of trickle here, maybe whatever here and there. And then yesterday we closed 3 deals. 2-3 weeks after we really locked in on what we're doing. That feels like right.
Right.
But in a year from now, everything could be different.
With real contracts.
With real contracts.
Through DocuSign.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like they're signed. There's like wires coming through.
There's actual legal writing on these documents.
We are legally
in business.
We are
legally
in
business. Holy shit.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't actually have shares yet. We should talk about that.
You fucking do. Shut up.
I need to buy those.
Don't let a little bug in Stripe get you down. You got the goddamn shares.
Actually, I think you have the shares.
I have the problem with Stripe. Oh, we don't even. This is so stupid. I didn't want to admit to the general public how stupid this is. Guys, when you start a company, okay?
Yes. Take note of what this man is about to say. Right.
When you start a company, basically you on paper, between your co-founders, you basically say, hey, what percentage do I own of the whole pie? What percentage do you own of the whole pie? What percentage do you, however many co-founders you have, right? So you've already fucked this up because you haven't set any stock aside for, I don't know, not you guys.
Like employees, like investors.
Employees, investors, people that are going to want to think twice before joining your crazy pirate ship. Of chaos, right? So you want to bring on a salesperson. Well, that salesperson can go get a job up and down the street, left and right. Go to a huge company,
a
stable income, sleep at night, that kind of thing. Or he could come to you. And the only way he's going to come to you or she's going to come to you is if they get a little taste of the upside. That's why you set aside at least 10% of the stock
at least
for them. You already fucked that up, of course, because you didn't do that, right?
Yeah.
So you have to dilute everybody by 10%.
Yep. Here's all you. And you go, squeep. Boop.
Okay. You've diluted yourself by 10%. Please set this aside and make sure everyone understands. Now, after you've diluted everyone by 10%, you might say, okay, perhaps we have an incoming order. We've sent out an invoice or we have some, crayon on a piece of paper and someone agreed to send us 10 grand, whatever it is. Okay. Like you're not far off from that,
no,
right?
We're not.
Yeah. It's not crayon. But it is.
It's pretty much ink. Yeah.
It's borderline crayon. Okay.
It's rough.
Now, you send out the invoice and someone actually agrees to send you the money. Guess what? You need to have a bank account.
You have to receive that
money.
You
need to receive that money somehow. And it shouldn't go into Joe Schmo's personal bank account. Okay. What do you do now? You've got to set up a C Corp. What's a C Corp? Well, it's an entity that can operate like a person, it can have a bank account. It hopefully is in Delaware, so nobody knows who you crazy asses are in the first place, right? Anyway, there's services that you can set this up through. I'm not going to name them because they haven't paid me for this plug.
But if they want
to. But if they want to, you know who to reach out
to. Yeah. You know who you are.
So anyway, there's ways to facilitate this. You open up your Delaware, you incorporate in Delaware, you get the paperwork, you tell the IRS, they hand you an EIN number, an employee identification number. Anyway, you get all this shit. Everything's great. And then you get a notification that you need to actually purchase your shares.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your shares are struck at a very, very minuscule 0.00001.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just say 50% of the company is worth $50, right? 25% of the company is worth $25. And you need to buy those shares today. Okay. Then you file something called an 83B. You tell the IRS, don't tax me yet. Tax me when I sell it.
It doesn't have any value
yet.
It's
not worth anything. Anyway, so to buy these shares and to officially, you know, own your stake in the company, you actually need to buy them with cash.
Yeah.
Or you could buy them with IP. You could say, I'm not going to pay $50. My IP is worth much more than that. But the problem is, if you buy it with IP, you need to delineate exactly what IP you added to the company. Or when you go to sell, or you have some crazy investors, they go, you know, Nick, how much was your IP really worth? And then you have a bad day.
Yeah.
And then you screw everything up. So, I fucked up, man.
Yeah.
You basically can elect to buy something with IP or buy it with cash. And I basically we have to do a mulligan on this and have to do it all over. And then
everyone
spends $50, $30, whatever it is. And whatever. Then we just do it over again.
You know, we've learned something.
Let's pretend we sell the company for $1 billion.
Okay.
Casual. Why would anyone need hundreds of millions of dollars in cash?
Right.
You don't.
No, I don't want.
What would you need hundreds of millions of dollars in cash for? In fact, you don't want fucking hundreds of millions of dollars of cash.
No.
So ultimately, imagine that your shares were owned. Again, someone's going to the comment section is going to, you know, to say this is fucking bullshit. But just imagine if you were just the beneficiary of this thing. You hang on to it. Maybe you swap it into something else. There's just no reason you need to take a lump sum windfall of hundreds of millions of dollars of cash. There's nothing that, I mean, what the fuck are you going to buy? Come on. What are you going to buy, a super yacht?
The only thing I can think of that I could spend hundreds of millions of dollars on would be like a super yacht. And I mean, dude, you can get a yacht a lot cheaper than a few hundred million. And I might buy myself a boat someday, but I'm not going to spend a few hundred million. I mean,
that would be the dumbest possible thing you could do to the point where, like, I'm not even sure, like, your friends and family probably wouldn't, like, let you do it.
No.
Like, you would be stopped.
My wife would not.
No.
Like, no.
She seems very reasonable.
She is.
And intelligent.
Yeah, she's smarter than me.
I don't think she's going to go, hey, you know, Michael, all this hard work, and you just want to park your boat next to Jeff Bezos.
Yeah,
like, that's what this is all about.
This is actually me one-upping Bezos, who has more money than I will ever see. So whatever.
I mean, for him, it doesn't really fucking matter. But for us in the hundreds zone, you just don't want to have to take that in cash.
No. And what I would always want is, and this has basically been my sort of plan, you know, if I were to come into like a windfall, is basically goal number one is to sustain it while taking out whatever I need, and probably just what I need. Like, maybe give myself a little lifestyle expansive boost, but I want to put enough into like dividend stocks and like things that pay out regularly, possibly an annuity, that's going to pay out enough, that just covers my year every year, right?
Let's do the math, all right? So
let's see it.
Okay, you pull down $100 million slug. You will have access now to private investments. You will be able to beat 5%. Your 7% annual return is 7 mil. Your monthly run rate on just pure gravy is $583,000 a month. Okay.
I couldn't spend that in a month.
Okay.
I couldn't.
Now, we're going to play this game. $583,000 a month. You go and you buy a $6 million, $7 million house. The mortgage on that is about $50,000 a month. Okay. So $50,000, you're at $533,000. You want a car, right?
Yeah.
So you go and you get a...
we're getting the Ferrari.
Yeah, let's face it. Yeah, all right. So which one?
The... oh, shoot. It's numbers, and I can't remember the numbers. Which one were we talking about the other day?
F8.
Lower than that. Just one lower.
A 488.
Yeah.
One older. Okay. But that's negligible. Let's just say, okay, fine. You want a 488. Fine. You like the, you know, the break into the turbo space, 700 horsepower.
Yeah.
All right. $2,500 a month. You're at $530,000 a month. All right, what else you got?
Like, I don't even know.
You like to eat and go out.
Yeah,
and
have a nice time. To go out.
Let's say you spend $1,000 every day.
Good grief.
Okay.
If
let's
I
take
can.
30,000 out. You're at 500,000 flat.
Gosh.
Let's keep going. What else do you like to do?
Oh my God. Work. Build software.
Okay, so that's cash flow positive.
What else do I spend my money on? I do love like being on the water. So let's
all right. Let's say you let's charter say a boat.
How many days
a month do you charter the boat?
Oh, I mean it's you know 2 weekends. You know, not even every month because it's only when I can. So there's a handful of them.
All right, so $10,000 a day times two is $20,000. Maybe let's say $40,000 a month.
Sure,
we're at $460,000. What else do you need to do?
I don't. How can I spend more money?
You can't.
We're gonna go on a shopping spree every month.
Okay,
I'm gonna go spend like 50.
You're hanging out with Drake. You're going to LV.
Yeah. Shoot.
All right. So you spend $15,000.
Yeah.
You spend $20,000.
Okay, and I want a new watch every month.
Okay.
And I'm going to buy an AP every month. No, 50. I'm going to buy an AP every month.
All right. You have $390,000 left.
I just want to say this sounds like the most boring life imaginable.
Well, it's now that we've done, but by the way, has anyone ever done this? I do that. I have a buddy who goes, so this game we're playing is ridiculous, obviously,
yeah.
Right? I have a buddy who did this to me publicly and literally I got shamed. Like I was like, oh, you know, I really want to make X. He goes, how much is your rent? I was like, I don't know. He's like, 10 grand. All right. How much is your car? What do you want to drive? Okay, 4,500. He's like, okay, 14,500. He's like, you like to eat? He's like, yeah. He's like, all right, 10 grand, 24,000. What else? I was like, so why do you need $200,000 a month in free cash flow? You fucking idiot.
What do you need that
you
for?
You don't.
You absolutely do not. And I think what's important to realize is like, you might even think that you do. Like you might even think you want the life that you just explained, but I think everybody should that wants to succeed and should sit down and do that exercise. What is my like craziest dream life?
Well, because we did this before we were negotiating ultimately the final split of the equity, and I was like, hey, here are some scenarios, realistic scenarios mm-hmm. about what we could perhaps sell this company for, start at the end kind of thing, right?
Right.
I know, guys, you heard half of a conversation of us talking about how hard and the grind this is, but like, hey, if it actually works, you know, what do those numbers look like?
And you have to dream big.
And dream big.
To,
But so we created three scenarios and I was basically like, in this lowest scenario, here's your cash payout or stuff, whatever the fuck, however it exits, right? However we exit. Are you happy with that number?
It would be like utterly life changing.
No, but I asked you, are you happy? To make sure that you didn't say no.
Right. Right.
Like, hey, you know, we need to, okay, well that changes what we can do and what we can sell and maybe how long we have to work on this, you know?
Yeah.
So if you don't have that weird, creepy money conversation with your co-founders or whatever it is, then like, how can you point to the distance and have any sense of focus? And
exactly.
How do you know that once you've arrived at the right place?
Yeah.
Because one of the things that happens is, right, is companies will get these early crazy offers. And then you have to sit there and go, Jesus Christ, no one's offered me $100 million before ever. No one's offered me $20 before. This is completely insane. And then for us, I think it's relatively easy because we say, well, hey, what was your number?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, too low. All right.
Yep.
Sorry, guys, we can't do it.
Nope, that's not going to work.
From a non-emotional standpoint. Now, I know this sounds absurd in the dollar terms, but ultimately those are the multiples. And well, you know. That's why we're in the software game, kids.
Because you know what? The fact is, I would be shocked if somebody doesn't try to like take us off the board early at a number that's going to like, ooh, you know, I'm going to see that and I'm going to see my cut and I'm going to go, oh my gosh.
But we still have our sense of hey, is this the dream that we asked for?
Exactly.
Or are we just cashing out early at the first offer? I mean, the stories that I know from my personal network, and they're real, okay? There was always a crazy offer, and the final offer was hundreds of millions mm-hmm. of dollars higher.
Just look at the Netflix Blockbuster thing. I've read Mark Randolph. I can't think of the name of his book. What is it actually called? That'll Never Work is the name of his book by Mark Randolph. It's like the story of, oh yeah, because it's the story of Netflix, which was literally, hey, that will never work. Fun fact, they... We're going to, the whole idea for Netflix was predicated on one idea. Can you send a DVD in the mail?
Mm.
And they were like, well, I guess if we put a DVD in the mail and it makes it, we're going to build this business. Mm. So they did it and it survived. And they were like, okay, we're going to build it. They found out 3 years into Netflix that that DVD never actually went through the mail sorter. It just went to the bus, or into the mail truck, and the mail truck took a shortcut that day and ended up like going directly to the next mailbox. Their whole business was predicated on an unsubstantiated claim. And now they built Netflix.
Wow.
Love that story. The other one I love from that book is them flying to Texas. And that story is crazy. They had just had like a big corporate party the night before. They wake up to a phone call and they're like, Blockbuster wants to meet with you today. And they were like, oh my God.
That's how we're going to feel tomorrow.
We're all hungover. What do we do? Yeah, us. And so they like chartered a private flight, which none of them had ever
done. Feel free
done
to make
before.
A bid for us tomorrow morning when Michael and I are hungover.
And they were like, we've never done this before. We don't. So they like get to Texas only for a Blockbuster to give them this insane number.
What was the first number from Blockbuster?
I wish I could remember, but
90 million or something.
It
like
was
that?
Something like close to 100. And they were just like, no. And they were like, we want to make this. And Blockbuster was like, absolutely. You guys are crazy. Like we called you here as a favor.
Right.
Actually, I want to say Netflix was like 100 million. Blockbuster was like, how about 20?
Okay.
Like they just lowballed them and they were like, no. And they on the plane ride back, they were basically like, dude, I think we just screwed up. They were so scared. They were like, we just ruined we're never going to get an offer like that and we're going to be broke. And of course, you know, Netflix, what is Netflix worth now? Billions. I mean,
what's interesting about this topic, right? Because it can sound from one angle, it can sound very entitled, right?
Oh,
like,
sure.
Oh, I don't want the 20. What you have to remember here, and it's a very important but subtle point, is that you built something from scratch that has an intrinsic value that you have a perspective on. It is your duty to get a fair price for that truth that you've uncovered. There's no entitlement here. There's no fake, you know, make believe. It's, well, I solved a problem that I believe is worth this much in the market. And if I don't have that number, I have to respectfully say, hey guys, thanks, but no thanks. I'm really looking for this number. This is my belief about, and that's all you, you know, if anything, It's not even entitlement. It's you're fucking crazy. You're out of your mind. Someone just offered you all this money and you've been like eating ramen noodles for the past 6 years. You know, take yourself out to dinner for God's sake. And you're saying, no, I believe that this is worth X for whatever reason, whatever metrics you have. And you just stick to it. So I used to look at this whole game from a distance, you know, sells for X, sells for, and you see these crazy astronomical numbers, but this is the phenomenon of tech and this is the phenomenon of scaling out a solution infinitely.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, back in the, you know, if you're in a business that isn't scalable, like if you create your knit sweaters or something is by hand, you're never going to see these numbers.
Right.
But you can't get pissed at the guy that's decided to build software instead of sweaters. You're just in the sweater game and they're in the software game, and that can be infinitely replicated instantly, while a sweater, as far as I'm concerned, takes a lot of time for you to sit down and knit. As much as
I've never made one, but I would imagine.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I am a big sweater guy, but I never made one.
So. Yeah. So,
you know, and that kind of goes back to what we were talking about is like, it's just two different problems that two different people love and care about. A lot of people are going to try to jump into building software, right? We already see it all the time. They're all, you know, everybody.
Well, I did it. I was fish out of water. I probably shouldn't have done it, if that makes any sense. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of feeling a little bit more comfortable in this world now, eventually.
And the reason was you were willing to learn.
Right.
You were willing to accept defeat and try again and try something different and keep an open mind. And, but like I've said for years, as much as I love dining, I love food, I love interesting food and interesting restaurants, but I will never in a million years run a restaurant or open a restaurant or even probably invest in a restaurant because I don't know anything about restaurants. I don't know anything about dining really from a business perspective. I won't jump into it. And I mean, it's not lucrative as much. I mean, it can be, but it's not as lucrative as like software, whatever. I'm just really, you know, my luck in life is that I was a nerdy, lonely kid obsessed with my computer. I'm just really, you know, and I love this story. I tell people this a lot. This is like on my website, part of my story. We did not have the money for a computer. This is the early 90s. And my uncle, who was an engineer and you know, really good with computers from an early, way earlier on than most people, he was like, I want my whole family connected to the internet so we can communicate. And he like went to the scrap pile at his work and built my family our first computer.
Really?
Out of scrap parts. Yeah, 100%. This is true. And I didn't care anything about it. That was like, that's my dad's thing and I don't care. And then my dad one day goes to, you know, Walmart or something and buys a box copy of Paint Shop Pro Jazz. And hell, I could do art on the computer. I was so hooked instantly. And it's just never ended for me.
Huh.
But my whole story starts from like a scrap part computer. I didn't have my own computer until I was 15 years old. I saved my money. I worked, I saved every penny I could make to build myself a desktop. And, you know, and it's fascinating to me to think about like how this has all happened for me. And it's, you know, it's fortunate and I'm thankful for it. I had some awesome people to like encourage me along the way. You know, I had a fifth grade teacher that knew I was a nerd and she was like, you don't have to go outside with the other kids. Actually, why don't you take this computer apart and figure out how to put it back together? And I like, dude, when we cash out of this thing, that woman's getting a cut because she changed my life. My uncle changed my life. Like mm-hmm. these people sewed into me in their own little ways. And I just like, there's some intrinsic piece of me that's like, okay, yeah, I was like geared towards this a little bit, but the people that saw that in me, took the chance on me, gave me these things in life that I in no way deserved, no way earned. That's actually what, if I'm being really honest, that's what motivates me every day. I owe it to those people because they took a chance on me. I'm not going to let that chance go to waste.
I think we're going to do this again, right?
Yeah.
We're going to do this again.
We're going to do this forever. You're stuck with me.
Fuck yeah, dude.
You are stuck with me, man.
Hey, what are we? Okay. So what are our cheesy business CTAs for today? Hey, we might start raising some money pretty soon.
Yeah.
If you are interested in generative AI and sales enablement solutions, you know where to find us, guys.
Yeah. Get on this rocket ship.
And what's the name of the company?
We are fastoutreach.ai today. We might change that.
We might change it. Probably by the time you see this. It could be something else, but we'll set up the 301 redirect. We'll be just fine.
Yeah, we'll be fine, and we'll keep our SEO and nice and tight.
And if you guys like this show and you want to see Michael and I nerd out again and again and again, and maybe when our dark horse co-founder
when he comes to light,
we'll bring him on too. But that's a show. That's a pod.
That's
thanks
great,
for coming
dude.
On, baby.
Dude, thanks for having me.
I love it.